Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwindiger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing, subscribe to our podcast, leave us a wonderful five-star review, and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic or two of interest to the community. And today we are talking about cyber insurance.
You know, David, that was in caps. You didn't read it in caps.
Oh, sorry. Cyber insurance.
The views and opinions expressed. That's great. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
And of course, we have tried to get cyber insurance for the podcast, but they don't offer fire insurance for cyber dumpsters.
So what's our quick summary of this? What is it? This is from Nationwide Insurance, and it's super exciting. Cyber insurance generally covers your business's liability for data breach involving sensitive customer information. General liability insurance covers bodily injuries or property damage resulting from your product, services, or operations, but cyber insurance is often excluded from a general liability policy. So as kind of a summary, the first thing we want to talk about is what different policy types are available. And there's some data here from Nationwide where you can get data compromise protection, you can get identity recovery protection, you can get cyber protection, which covers damage caused by a virus or computer attack, as well as helping with the cost of restoring and recreating data.
I think that's primarily where your ransomware is going to fall into that type of policy then.
That makes sense. Another site, cyberinsure1.com, which I don't know how legitimate they are. I've never heard of them before.
It sounds fancy. Sounds legit.
Obviously. They have a really detailed page on the types of cyber insurance. And of course, this will be in the show notes. So if you want more detail in here, they talk about they offer first party insurance, which covers people directly involved in the incident. They offer liability coverage, which is situations that are caused by others. And what's mentioned here is data breaches or data theft and business secrets, which given all the third party coverage that's going on these days, that's super interesting. And then they offer a general benefits package that includes things like structured and planned security audits, post-incident management, public relations, major investigations and reports, and criminal reward funds. I think that one's really interesting, given what we're going to talk about later, about how insurers weren't really prepared for cyber insurance when they dived in. I think it's really interesting that this one is offering almost like MSP light services with the structured and planned audits and the investigations.
Yeah, one of the things that's happening in cyber insurance over the last couple of years, and this was hinted at a moment ago with the discussion of ransomware, is that the cost is for both policyholders and insurance companies is going up. So between 2016 and 2019, the cost of cyber attacks to insurers almost doubled. The numbers of policies increased by 60%. The number of insurers offering cyber insurance increased by about 35%.
But some of the insurers themselves are getting hit by ransomware. There's an insurer called CNA that got hit for $40 million.
Well, there was someone did an interview with Revil last year, and insurance companies was one of the industries that Revil specifically targets. because of how lucrative it is.
Nice. Because they're used to paying for things?
I guess. Insurance companies are used to writing checks.
Yeah. As David mentioned, the pricing has been going up. There was an article that we pulled out that said that it increased by an average of 32% this year to June. And another article said that rates had gone up 18% in Q1. And what's interesting there is that if you compare that directly to other types of insurance, other types of insurance only go up 1-2% per quarter. So we're going up multiples of what the normal type of insurance is. And that's just because we haven't hit equilibrium yet.
Right. So the other insurance is tracking with inflation, essentially, whereas this is obviously out of whack with that.
Yeah. And it's going to keep going up and up and up until it hits the equivalent, right? At which point it probably won't be any cheaper for people paying the ransomware. If they keep paying the ransomware, it's got to hit equilibrium with the ransomware payments, right?
Yeah, well, it's got to hit what they call the market clearing price, which is effectively a standard price for insurance company to offer and for people to accept it. The price won't necessarily keep going up and up and up if people hit that market clearing price and stop buying the insurance.
Well, I mean, it's like health. Well, it's not like health insurance because the insurance companies don't have a negotiated rate with the criminal enterprises that are doing this.
Wait, you're calling hospitals criminal? Come on now.
But let's say a third of companies, it's probably less. Let's say a tenth of companies get hit by ransomware and the insurance company pay out the ransomware payments. They have to increase their prices to their charging until they can cover all those ransomware payments. They're just siphoning money directly from the companies to the ransomware operators. They're just doing it at a slower annual rate for the companies that don't get hit. Like, you don't get hit for the first 4 or 5 years and you pay out your, you know, 1 million a year of the 10 million you're going to have to pay one day, or your insurance company will pay for you. You're just prepaying it.
Right. I mean, it's really about them figuring out what those prices need to be in order for it to make sense. Because the insurance companies, they aren't just raising money for profits. Obviously, they want to turn a profit because it's a profit-making venture. But if they don't have the funds to cover actual payouts, then they aren't able to protect other customers if they need to have a payout.
But that's the thing, is they shouldn't be paying out. They shouldn't be paying out. That's not a sustainable business model. Because then you're not actually getting any protection from the insurance. You're just, other than spreading your payments out over 10 years instead of paying it all in 1 year.
Well, it's not a matter. You don't get protection from insurance anyway. What you do is you get transference of risk. But that's the whole point of being able to figure this out, is that the insurance company needs to price it so that what they actually end up paying out is not as much as it is currently.
You know what? I would actually disagree with you. I think that insurance can produce reduction of risk, because if the insurance is priced appropriately, then you reduce your risk by reducing your payment to the insurance, by increasing your controls, you reduce your risk. Like, I guess I'm sorry, go ahead.
What you're talking about is the organization makes a decision, though, not to transfer the risk to insurance, but to mitigate instead.
To some extent. I mean, either, like, for example, you know, everybody buys car insurance. Your car insurance would be way more expensive if you didn't have airbags, because the airbags reduce the risk to your body, or, you know, seat belts, or so a lot of the fancy new auto stop things. Like, that doesn't prevent you from getting the insurance. It reduces your costs in insurance. Like, that's what I'm saying, is that if the insurance policies are priced appropriately, which we're both getting at, they're not priced appropriately now, but like, if you have the right controls in place, then your insurance policy would be priced, you know, more modestly, versus if nobody, like what's going on right now is the Wild West. Nobody has good controls. They're not getting good controls. They're just getting this underpriced cyber insurance to pay out for them, you know, when they inevitably get hacked.
Right. And you know, several articles that are going to be leaked in the show notes, or linked in the show notes, kind of get to this point that the insurance companies don't have the data that they need in order to do that appropriate pricing. You know, you were talking about airbags. You know, the insurance company can look at the model car that you have and know that it has airbags. That's not an easy thing for a cyber insurance policy to say, oh, do they have the proper controls or not? And this is kind of, I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit, in that I think that really they need to treat ransomware as a separate policy and do have specific checks for the mitigations of ransomware itself, versus trying to roll this up into other types of cyber insurance policies.
Yeah, because other types of incidents and other types of breaches, they may be expensive in terms of, you know, bringing in a third party firm, conducting the investigation, forensics, you know, time lost from not working. But those are not as direct, maybe. They're definitely less than, you know, $40 million ransomware bill.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the amount that's as important as the ability to forecast the amount. Because I think you can easily, well, not easily, I think there's a more formulaic method for determining what the cost of response to a security incident that does not include ransomware versus a ransomware, which the cost is almost dictated by the attacker directly. Because it's extortion. But the whole point of, you know, the insurance companies not pricing this stuff accurately now, and folks paying less for cyber insurance in light of ransomware, is that it's creating what insurance companies call a hard market. It's a time period for insurance where there's a high demand for insurance, but a low supply. So a lot of people would like to have insurance, but the insurers are cutting back on their supply of it because it's too costly for them to provide it.
It seems like it's simple enough for a capitalist market to solve, right? Like, you just keep putting the prices up till people stop buying it.
Well, that's not the only mechanism here, because, you know, we were talking about controls a little bit. So, because you can say, well, if you had a black box and said, here's a company, how much are you going to pay for cyber insurance for that company? Then that would be the only way that you're going to get there, is simply increasing the prices, because you don't know anything about that black box. But to go to the point you were talking about a little bit ago with the airbags, is that the less opaque that box is, the more those prices can come down, because they understand the risk associated with that greater. So two things will happen, is that the prices will go up, and also the more insurance companies acquire information or data about what they're insuring, the better that will be. I tried to do some research before this about the history of car insurance rates, and how all that worked, but apparently I did not really come across it. But my expectation would be that it may have followed a similar type of thing, because insurance companies didn't understand cars initially. But
you mean horseless carriages?
Horseless carriages, right? But we've had, you know, over 100 years worth of data now, so the ability for insurance companies to gauge how much they need to insure a car for based on the model and the aspects of the driver, who the driver is and all that, is pretty well understood. And the insurance industry itself has been around for centuries, being able to figure out insurance for homes and liability and all of that.
So how do we speed that up? Any thoughts on how to make that a lot faster?
I think insurance companies have to share data with each other on when events happen, when security incidents happen, when ransomware happens, and go back and say, all right, this company had a ransomware event, and go back and say, these are the controls they had in place. And being able to put that into a data sharing pool that other insurance companies can also access, so that they can compare this event and these controls with another event and the controls that they had there, to see if there was which controls actually reduced the overall impact or the cost of the event.
Yeah, that would be a report that I would clamor for. Like, if they released that and they showed, you know, having AV on the endpoint, you know, reduced cyber attacks by 20%, having network IDS reduced it by 13%. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, it's all well
numbers.
Yeah, because it's all well and good right now for the insurance companies to know what's there ahead of time. But after the event happened, and being able to do that comparison is what really needs to come out. And insurance companies holding it to themselves and learning themselves that the pool is too small, that data really needs to be shared across insurance companies.
Yeah, we have, because we have that now in cars and in people for like health insurance. Like we know, you know, smoking increases your risk this much. Driving without a seatbelt increases your risk this much. So you can put numbers on that.
Right.
So of course, on the other hand, in a car versus computers, in a computer, the threat is always evolving and changing. Ransomware has been going on for years, but there's definitely been a spike recently. I don't think we see spikes of... Do we see spikes of like people hitting phone poles and things? I mean, I guess there are, I mean, I guess the roughly analogous thing here would be things like hurricanes and earthquakes and tornadoes, which insurance companies protect against by being geographically dispersed, you know, not only insuring yourself in Galveston, Texas. So when a hurricane comes through, you're totally wiped out. That's hard to do for computer insurance though.
Well, when you say not wiped out, you mean the insurance company having all their policies in Galveston versus having insured people in other parts of the country?
Yeah, if they only insured people in Galveston and a hurricane came through and knocked down all the houses in Galveston and wiped out all the cars, then that company would be wiped out. They'd have to pay out you know, all their money and be done. So, but there's, I'm trying to think if there's an equivalent of geographically dispersing your policies for cyber insurance, because with ransomware, like heck, like with the last episode where we talked about Kaseya, like even if your companies were geographically and globally dispersed or SolarWinds, like you might get hit all at once with 20 or 30 companies all needing to pay out.
Well, that might be part of the statistics that the companies might need to be able to collect is not insuring everybody in a certain industry.
Yeah.
Well, or to say, well, we will only insure this many customers of this MSP.
No, actually, like that would be, that'd be really useful too. If you got the information through audit and stuff on like what products they use, like Windows products versus Linux products, you know, IIS versus Apache, and like diversify your software that you're insuring.
Right. Hmm. Yeah. So what insurance companies would try to avoid is ending up falling victim to what Bruce Schneier saw as a class break event, where a certain failure in one thing causes widespread problems.
Right.
So for instance, RDP vulnerability, for instance.
Because everybody's got Windows and everybody uses RDP.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
But really, this whole thing is about the immaturity of cybersecurity. That's just it. It's not that cybersecurity is bad or it's doomed to fail or anything like that. It's simply immature.
Cybersecurity insurance, right?
Or I'm sorry. Well, I mean,
we are kind of immature.
We can debate that as, but yes, I meant cybersecurity insurance. It's simply immature. And I would like to think that the insurance companies will figure this out. I mean, a lot of the, there's several of the articles that we read, I kind of get the impression that what they really wanted to call for was more like the cyber insurance companies should just turn into turtles. They should just turtle and just pull back and not really tackle this and figure out how to get over this. You know,
I mean, that's always your
refuse to play a ransomware or whatever.
That's always your first impression when you get burned, right? You yank the hand back. So,
right. But if an insurance company decides, I don't want the insurance companies to do this. I want them to figure it out, but I would certainly understand if they did. What I don't want for sure is that the governments dictate that the insurance companies aren't allowed to figure this out by saying you are not allowed to pay ransomware or you have to follow this particular framework. Because here's the thing about having a forced framework like the UK government is suggesting is that maybe that framework that they're saying, oh, well, you have to have this minimum level of security or whatever. There's no evidence that whatever criteria that they're coming up with could be effective or will be effective. They may come up with this framework and everybody could adopt it, but it could be completely ineffective because it's simply going to have or force people to compliance. as a lot of people in cybersecurity understand, is that compliance is not security. And simply because you're compliant doesn't necessarily mean you're secure. And I think it's just going down the wrong path that we've seen time and time again.
The government, we're from the government and we're here to help.
Yeah, terrifying. Why do you want to scare me like that?
All right, so what should the insurance industry do and what are they doing right now? In fact, one of the things they are doing is what David mentioned earlier. Seven companies have come together to create a new company called Cyber AccuView, which I have serious questions about their naming ability, that's going to collect the aggregated and anonymized data from multiple insurance companies on security incidents. So that should allow for all kinds of stuff, better risk rating, better estimations. We might be able to get some reporting out of them. I would love to see anonymized data about it because this is something that companies just do not share. Nobody wants to talk about their failures. It's funny. Everybody talks about how, you know, oh, you can't succeed anywhere. You know, everybody fails sometime. We all talk in the security industry about how there's only two kinds of companies, those who have been hacked and those who don't know yet. But nobody wants to talk about it except in informal settings. So that would be amazing to get some of that data out there and available for review.
Yeah, I hope they're collecting a lot of really good data points on it. I hope it's not simply going to be kind of anecdotal. They really need to be able to say, these are the attacks and these were the controls that were in place, and have some kind of relationship between what failed and what didn't and what worked.
You know,
Does
the Verizon DBR include what control detected the attacks? I think I remember it includes like how was it detected, like third-party notification versus self-detection versus like MSSP, but doesn't include the tool that detected it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't recall
seeing
that.
Any bells off the top of my head.
Yeah, I would love to see that in some of these IR compilation reports, like which tool was most effective at actually catching the bad guys.
Yeah, and they don't need to call out vendors, but at least a category of tools would be helpful. And I know I've been trying to pitch this as an important aspect of incident response and reporting in order to determine effectiveness of tools, is to ensure that this is in an organization itself, not for the broader public consumption, but in the incident itself, the detection mechanism must be in there. So that over time, you can look to say that our AV is a winner for detection, but our HIPS is not, or something like that, to see where you're really getting your successful indicators from or your successful preventions from.
No, I don't know if we've talked about this before or if I'd been looking at this separately, but yeah, I was looking at adding that to the metrics and then being able to put like a, you know, how many things were detected by each one, how many things were, you know, the attacker successful in getting in and getting past, and, you know, how many things were bypassed by attackers. You know, if it was detected by the AV, then it got past the email and it got past the network, like the firewalls and the proxy. And then, yeah, being able to kind of put together almost like an effectiveness number for each piece of the pie or piece of the onion. Like which is the one that's catching the most and which one's catching the least. And if we switched out the least effective one, like are there more effective tools available?
Mm-hmm. Actually, now that I think about it, you mentioned the Verizon breach report. I think bringing those on as partners in that cyber review company would be helpful as well, because there are going to be a lot more incidents where those incident response teams are called in, which may not necessarily involve an insurance company, because the insurance company doesn't have to pay out.
Yeah. And as long as they're only focused on those seven companies, they're only going to see the incidents from those seven companies. If you bring in the IR partners, you'll see more. That's always a plus.
Yeah. And hopefully this helps those seven companies do better. And that may incentivize other companies to join that partnership.
Yeah. So another thing I can see the insurance industry doing is on-site audits, coming in and kind of digging in, kind of like the controls organizations do now. PCI and that sort of thing, kind of digging into your security, looking through your documents, looking through your plans, your IR plans, maybe, and this is something David added to the notes, leading tabletop exercises, which was mentioned by that company, the Cyber Insure One company. They'll come in and do tabletops and exercises with you. And another one you added here was bringing in attack sim tools. I would love to see insurance companies do that. It's kind of like how they, well, this is not a, because I don't want this in my automobile, but some insurance companies are adding kind of the black box to your car to report back on how fast you're driving. Little snitchy black box in your car.
I was thinking the exact same thing, actually.
But I mean, for a company, they could put in some tools on a couple subnets. They could run constant attacks. They could see which ones were successful, which ones were blocked, and get a decent idea of how vulnerable, how delicious and juicy your internal network is.
And they could treat them like black boxes, like they do for cars, because that black box doesn't come without strings or incentives, right? So they'll reduce your auto insurance if you're willing to put a black box on there. So if you're willing to put an attack simulation tools on your network from your insurance company, maybe your costs come down. And and also, depending on how the insurance company worked that, they might even allow the customer access to those attack sim tools.
To improve their controls.
So you could get the ability to test other security tools on your network and leverage the attack sim tool that the insurance company has provided, or test your analysts, or, you know, any of the other, you know, attack simulation. I'm a pretty big fan of it, even though I haven't had the opportunity to leverage it yet. But the concept, I think, is fantastic. I think there's broad reaching implications of being able to do attack simulation. And if the insurance company lets you have access to that in a certain way, as well as giving you a discount on your insurance, that could be a big win for both sides.
Yeah, you'd have to be careful though, because companies are trying to game it. They'd like put it on an empty network or with like a block all firewall in between or something like that. So you'd have to do, like, you know, maybe a bigger discount based on the percentage of network we can reach or something like that.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, like, there's got to be a level of trust for it to work.
Yeah. Yep. Another, relying on submitted documentation rather than doing on-site audits. Maybe they ask you to submit your policies, submit some example after action reports. Although based on the other article we looked at last week, maybe you shouldn't be making after action reports. Because that's
crazy.
This goes back to what we talked about for mergers. Like when you're merging with a company, and like this is kind of similar. Like the insurance company is taking on your risk. And when you're merging with another company, you're taking on their risk. So it's actually really similar.
Right.
So, yeah. And does the insurance company need more information? It sounds like they're doing their absolute minimum or even less than minimum due diligence. So,
yeah. Well, something we kind of mentioned earlier was that I think they need to refocus their policies and pull ransomware out into its own policy or addendum and charge that differently. So, you know, if you want a cyber protection policy, you're going to pay X. But if you want the ransomware addendum, you're going to pay X plus X, right? Or something like that. And also, because ransomware, there are generally agreed upon controls that help mitigate ransomware. Proper backups, proper business continuity and data recovery plans. And the insurance company may come in and say, you know, we will sell you a cyber insurance policy with the ransomware addendum, and the ransomware addendum is going to cost you this amount. But maybe when they review your business continuity, disaster recovery, and your backup plans, that amount may change depending on the maturity or your ability for you to execute on those plans. Because if you have a recovery point objective, an RPO, that's really low, and you're able to actually execute on that, the insurance company might offer you a really low discount, because if you are hit with ransomware, you will almost not likely pay the ransom because you're able to recover from that event within a legitimate amount of time for your business to continue to function.
One other suggestion was brought over from health insurance, the idea of co-insurance, where the company needs to pay out part of it as well, maybe half. So they're not removing the risk completely. They're just removing part of the risk. And that would probably be only, I don't know if that applied to all the coverage or just the ransomware coverage. I would imagine for ransomware, they probably have a higher co-insurance payout. Again, this kind of goes back to the health insurance where, you know, different categories of things have different co-insurance payouts. So right. That might be interesting where, you know, for a breach, like you have to pay 20% of the IR investigation, but you have to pay 50% of a ransomware payout or something like that.
Yeah, because right now in either situation, they only have to pay the deductible, which is, you know, pennies on the dollar for ransomware.
Do they even have a deductible for cyber insurance stuff? Or does the company pay all of it?
No, they do.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I haven't actually been involved in the cyber insurance purchasing, but this has been really interesting.
Well, if you go back and if you look at the a lot of the articles relating to the municipal governments that were hit with ransomware in the last couple of years, there's mentions in those articles about the deductibles that those municipalities paid versus the entire ransom.
They got the platinum plan. They only had to pay like a flat $300.
Yeah. It's the government. I'm sure they got a great discount.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything, any other insight on this?
Nope.
All right. I'm all out of insight for today too. Feel free to come and join us on Twitter and tell us where we got everything wrong. And thanks for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Serengeti Sec. Download and listen from your favorite podcast application. Keep your head up, your spear sharp.